This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
So dig this.
So you do a show at the Forum. At the Forum. With the Lakers.
No, at the Staples Center.
With the Lakers.
And Shaq was the guest star, too.
Right.
So Larry says, and he was great. Shaq's a good guy. So he said, let's go back. And this is like a year and a half ago. And they were practicing, and they were naked. So Shaq...
The Lakers practice naked?
No, this happened before... They shoot the show 5 months in advance.
Okay, I see.
It was during the playoffs.
Right.
So for some reason...
He went back to the locker room.
Yeah. Larry says, we got to thank him. I said, fine, whatever you want. And so I go there, and Shaq, you know, he's a man, I'm a man, okay? But he's 7'3". Mm-hmm. Why isn't his head the size of like five, you know, gigantic basketballs? I don't understand it. It doesn't make it... Because I look down at another man's penis.
Yeah.
I'm a man, too.
Yeah.
Well, come on.
Okay.
I started shaking like I had some kind of disease, and I was shaking like Marley's ghost. And I went, and I actually said to Shaq, Conan, and I went, what is that? And to another man. And he had no idea. I'm not kidding. Can I stand up with a camera? Can you get me standing up?
Oh, please. We're going to see now.
He has this on a sled like Rosebud.
Right.
It has to be a foreign exchange student. Has to be. I have never seen anything like it. It has to be a tax deduction. I went home immediately, and I went home.
Johnny, join me at the window, Johnny.
So I went home. So dig this. I don't have a lot of time, Conan. I don't have a lot of time. Oh, what? I have no time. You asked me this question. I'm answering you. So I
think I asked you, how are you? And then we got here. I don't think the question was, let's talk about Shaq's penis. It's not here.
No, you asked me about the show. It was the toughest show. So I went home and I took off my pants and I was...
We don't want to hear about your pants coming off.
No, I looked at my own penis because I just saw something that was hanging like a salami. And my penis looked like a semicolon. And I almost had a nervous breakdown. So that's it.
Sit down.
Come on. I asked for something else. I'm in a sexual mood. I miss my girlfriend.
Rest in peace to the hilarious Richard Lewis.
An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher, control! Hey, before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train.
Episode 459, submission number 251, Easy Street. Easy Street aired on NBC from September 13th, 1986 to April 29th, 1987 for 22 episodes. That is six more than a crock block.
And this is the second show we've covered that premiered on September 13th of 1986. The other one being Galaxy High School back in episode 406. But counting the shows that we've covered that premiered in September of 1986, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So the other entries are Doctor Who, The Trial of a Time Lord season back in episode 427, Galaxy High School, which I mentioned back in 406, Photon back in episode 234, Life with Lucy, back in episode 243. Together We Stand, Nothing is Easy, back in episode 416. And guys, the last one, from episode 277. What a country!
Sing it!
I wanna be in America. Do, 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 do. In America, he's right for me. Do.
I still don't know the rest of the words in the middle.
Well, hey, while we research that, how about you listen to the theme to this show?
Easy Street. I'd love to live on Easy Street. Nobody works on Easy
were talking about this show as like part three of the great Hugh Wilson trilogy on this podcast. Part one, of course, being the famous Teddy Z. And then part two being
Frank's Place.
It was Frank's Place. It was the dramedy that was a little bit better than the famous Teddy Z, but not as good as what we're covering here. Or is it the other way around? I don't know. Anyway.
But it also gave us Shoddy LaRue.
Shoddy LaRue.
And hey, I said I was going to put that sound in retirement. I lied. Here it is.
My son's favorite character from my son's favorite show he plays, Shoddy LaRue, and Frank's Place, Don Yeso.
Thank you, John Barber.
So, Hugh Wilson, coming off of Police Academy. After Police Academy, he had a lesser-known movie called Rustler's Rhapsody with Tom Berenger and Celia Ward.
Ooh. It was no Body Slam.
No, it wasn't. And then you have, on the other end of things, the cancellation of WKRP and Lonnie Anderson, who was sort of an ingenue of Hugh Wilson, was coming off of a season paired with Linda Carter on Partners in Crime. That's another entry for another day. Both would be reunited for this project on NBC, which would take another lighthearted look at the emerging class war of the 1980s, because in the 1980s, it is a truth universally acknowledged that in America, there are three ways to get rich. One, win a lottery, sweepstakes, or other form of game. Two, inheritance. And three, marry into money. This show takes a witty look at two of these things. I see you're smirking, Mike.
Yeah, because I'm watching the open to What a Country because I want to get the right lyrics for Greg.
Anyway, L.K. Stevenson is a former Vegas showgirl who married a young, wealthy husband named Ned McGuire. The McGuires live in Palm Springs in a neighborhood that can be best described as rich. Everything is perfect, except for the fact that Ned, all of a sudden, took ill, found himself dying, and is, in fact, dead. And if you know anything about the law and marriages without prenups, and there is no evidence of a prenup in the 22 episodes of this show, LK, by virtue of being Ned's wife, gets everything, which is a thorn in the side of their in-laws, the Standards, Eleanor and Quentin Standard. You see, Eleanor Standard is Ned McGuire's sister, which makes them sisters-in-law. And she wants all of Ned's fortune to herself because, of course, she does. And then we have, on the other end of this craziness, LK's uncle, Alvin Bully Stevenson, and his best friend slash roommate, Ricardo Williams, at the Shady Grove Retirement Home in Los Angeles. Nice view if you like watching bag ladies at work, according to the fall preview issue of TV Guide from 1986. In fact, Bully is so thrilled with his life in general that he's about to drown himself in the bathtub. LK arrives, saying, "How would you like to spend a weekend with me?" And it turns out she's a rich widow with a mansion, tennis courts, chauffeur, and all. To which Ricardo says, "Thank you, Jesus." So we have two sides of this coin with LK, Bully, and Ricardo living in the mansion alongside Eleanor and Quentin. Suffice it to say, hilarity ensues, especially when you throw in Bobby the butler, who is basically your stereotypical sitcom butler in the mold of Benson Dubois or Jeffrey Butler. So now that you know the story, let's talk about the actors. L.K. McGuire, played by Lonnie Anderson. No explanation needed. Uncle Alvin Bully Stevenson is played by Jack Elam, best known for numerous roles as a villain in Westerns. In 1994, he was inducted into the Hall of Great Western Performers of the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City. Sadly, died in 2003 of congestive heart failure. His roommate, Ricardo Williams, is played by Lee Weaver, best known as his blind seer role in the 2000 epic, and it really is an epic, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He was also the original mailman in 1985's 227. But Greg,
yeah,
he was a junkyard owner in an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, that's great. What episode?
Bums making a mess all over the city.
Oh, bums making a mess all over the city.
And you know what they mean by making a mess.
Oh, we all know.
I think in case you don't know, we should ask Ernest Borgnine.
I masturbate a lot.
Getting mileage out of that clip the last couple weeks. But you said he was the mailman in 227?
Yes.
So that means he got to see Helen Martin just sitting there in the window. And don't forget, this week on 227, I sent you guys an image of Helen Martin sitting in the window that said, Happy 227.
Awesome.
I'm sure the listeners really enjoy hearing that anecdote. Oh, I want to know what Mike sent it, the guys in the group chat that we have to celebrate February 27th. Well, there you go.
Hey, on the Facebook page, we celebrated Leap Day by playing the end of that 130 Rock Leap Day episode with John Cullum as Leap Day Willem.
Playing the role of Eleanor Standard, Dana Ivey, who's more of a stage actress than anything. She was in stage productions of Macbeth, Present Laughter, Sunday in the Park with George, and she actually earned an Obie Award for her performance in Quatermain's Terms and Driving Miss Daisy. She originated the title role of Miss Daisy. And playing her husband, her put-upon husband, Quentin Standard, James Cromwell. I don't need to tell you what he's done. He's known for two films and two films only. Babe and Star Trek First Contact.
And more. I mean, we've talked about him, geez, probably about five times at this point. So that means we could make a Hall of Fame case. Just saying.
In fact, he recently won the Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Limited Series or Movie for his role in American Horror Story Asylum. I know it's not recent, but it's recent enough. And rounding out the cast as Bobby the Butler, Arthur Mallet, a British actor who was in Halloween, The Secret of Nim, Hook, and Mary Poppins. He reprised his role of Mr. Ages for The Secret of Nim 2, Timmy to the Rescue, which was his final film role. So now that you know all of the players, let's talk about what really happened on Easy Street as we start with the pilot. Just as Bully prepares to commit suicide, estranged niece LK arrives to whisk him and his roommate away to her luxurious mansion. Also living at the mansion, her deceased husband's sister and her husband, who aren't happy with the new arrangement. While Quentin tries to make the best of the situation, snobby Eleanor wants them all out of her brother's mansion. Episode 2. Pride goeth before a cheap hotel. LK attempts to lavish Bully with her wealth, which makes him uncomfortable, understandable, so he decides to return to the retirement home. Among the names in this episode, playing Mr. Haskell, it was a thing, Hall of Famer, that bastard Charles Logan, Gregory Itzen.
Oh, amazing. But also, he's not the only person who was on 24, because remember, James Cromwell played Jack Bauer's dad on 24.
Are we just going to ignore the fact that Gregory Itzen lost to a guy who busted his kneecap on Few?
Episode 3, Two-Party System. Eleanor refuses to invite Bully and Ricardo to her anniversary party, so LK throws another party upstairs. Because that worked so well on Saved by the Bell, didn't it?
I'm going to say we have a name here. Play with me here. Playing upstairs party guest is a gentleman by the name of Michael Gregory. If you have played some video games recently, you've heard his voice. In Madden NFL 18, he was the voice of Coach Hausler. But also, if you've played Cyberpunk 2077, he's the voice of Victor Vector.
And let's be honest, if you played Cyberpunk 2077, you obviously hate money.
Well, to be honest, the game's now $20, and I'm sure they patched it all up by now.
I'm sure they patched it all up, but yeah, back when it was released, it didn't get the best of receptions.
Other games he did voices for were Star Wars The Old Republic, Ninja Gaiden 3, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, and one of my favorite games, Mirror's Edge Catalyst. Episode 4, Comes a Horse.
LK, what are you doing? Wait. What are you doing to that horse?
Comes a horse.
Comes a horse.
Someone, please leave Francesa away from the horses.
Look, guys, Mike Francesa met Secretariat. I don't know if you know that, but he met Secretariat. He said so.
And I think based on this title, he may have also inseminated Secretariat.
Good night, everybody.
He said it, not me.
Hey, Ernest Borgnine, what do you have to say about this?
I masturbate a lot.
When Eleanor doesn't let Bully and Ricardo ride her prized racehorse, they go out by their own, only to come home with a broken down mare.
In this episode, there's a veterinarian who's obviously trying to take care of this broken down mare, and he's played by William Frankfather. Not a big name, but I mentioned him for one reason and one reason only. Greg, he was in a 1995 episode of Wings. And Greg, I don't know if we've ever heard how you really feel about Wings.
Yes, everyone knows I love Wings. I mentioned it 159 episodes ago.
Well, no, you mentioned it for the first time 159 episodes ago.
That's right. That was the first time. Can you believe that in 300 episodes, I never mentioned I love Wings until that moment?
Never, ever.
Never did. And if you're curious, it's season 7, episode 3, Death Becomes Him.
He was also in episodes of no less than 3 previous entries. J.J. Starbuck, The Slap Maxwell Story, and Frank's Place.
And he may have been on 3 previous entries at this point, but taking a look at his IMDb, I can tell there's about 2 or 3 more that might be coming down the road, possibly soon. I don't want to say low-key Hall of Fame case because we've never really mentioned him, but just throwing that out there, he's 1 away from 5, and we're definitely going to cover him again in the future.
Episode 5, Man Overboard. Oh my God, there's a man overboard. Bully crashes Eleanor's ladies' luncheon and wins the affections of one of the guests. LK couldn't be happier, but Eleanor is naturally horrified. Playing said lady, Midge Bacon. Bacon. Anne Haney played Mrs. Sellner and Mrs. Doubtfire and was in 8 episodes of Future Entry Movie Stars and 11 as Judge Marilyn Travellini in L.A. Law.
I really don't want to talk about it.
Not another Pulaski episode, and we've also talked about her in the past. Again, looking at her IMDb, it looks like she's been in a couple of previous entries, specifically Aftermath, where she played Gladys, Operator, and the Receptionist in a total of 4 episodes.
Episode 6, Spoon Lighting. Bully overextends himself buying a birthday gift for LK, so he takes a job at a malt shop, playing the proprietor of the malt shop, a person by the name of Doug, Robbie Rist, Donatello himself. Oh yeah, and something about Cousin Oliver too. Second known name, playing Mrs. Ryder, oh my God, this is the first time we're talking about this lady. She is a legend. Gloria Henry. Dennis the Menace's mom.
Oh.
It may be the first time we're mentioning her, but she did appear in a previous entry. She was on an episode of The Brady Brides. But really, beyond that, she wasn't on anything that was terribly short-lived.
Episode 7, Are We Not Men? A bad book review depresses Quentin, and snobbish Eleanor feels it's a waste of time to try and cheer him up. But that doesn't stop bullying Ricardo from trying.
I got a great name for this episode. Playing, just called Man at Basketball Game. Real specific name there. Is Mickey Morton. I hope you guys are sitting, because I have the credit that's going to make you guys fall out of your chairs. He played Mala in the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes, because remember, Peter Mayhew in the Star Wars Holiday Special was kissed by a man. Merry Christmas.
He was also Solomon Grundy in previous installments, Legends of the Superheroes.
That makes three? Okay. He was also in Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Oh my God!
So that's four!
Loki Hall of Fame case!
Wait, he was in a fifth show that we're going to cover eventually, even though it ran for like four seasons. He was in three episodes of Small Wonder.
And it is a travesty, by the way.
Oh, and he was in three episodes of Growing Pains. Oh, by the way, today would have been Alan Thicke's 77th birthday. March 1st, I'm talking about.
Episode 8. Bebop Man. Bully feels a twinge of jealousy when Ricardo receives recognition for a song he wrote decades ago. And a royalty check. So we have one big name, one kind of big name. Playing Jackie, somebody we already talked about on this podcast. Teddy Wilson from Sanford Arms.
And that's my mama. This may be a preview of something that I may use as Money in the Bank fodder next year. He was on 10 episodes of Rollout in 1973 and 74. And there is a great story I just heard on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast regarding Rollout, and specifically the star of that show, Stu Gilliam. I'm going to put it in my back pocket and save it, but I really think we need to cover Rollout one day. But yeah, Chico, there is another name in this episode that maybe rings a bell to me, but also should ring a bell to you guys. Playing a bouncer in this episode is Dan Tullis Jr. Where you know him from is Married with Children. He played Officer Dan. But also, he was a champion on the Jim Caldwell season of Tic-Tac-Doe. So he was on a previous episode, tangentially, maybe?
One more name. Playing Buddy Sims, Conte Candoli. You probably have no idea who this guy is, but he was a famous trumpeter, and he played the trumpet for the Doc Severinsen Orchestra on Tonight Show.
So, okay, so the people who ran Easy Street just had to go down studios in NBC and go to Carson Studio, to Studio One or wherever he was at, and say, hey, we need a trumpet player. There you go.
Episode 9, Charity Begins at Home. LK turns Elder's dignified charity dinner into a tacky Las Vegas extravaganza when the orchestra cancels out on her fundraising event.
Gosh, you want names? There's names in this episode.
Names upon names upon names. First of all, playing himself, Gomer Pyle himself, Jim Neighbors.
Golly!
Playing a lady by the name of Sheila. I'm guessing she's a showgirl like LK. Teresa Genzel, who we talked about in earlier entry, Teachers Only, but come on, we all know her as one of the best pyramid players ever.
No, beyond that, we've talked about her because she was on The Duck Factory, plus also she was on at least 1 week of Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour, but also people like me not necessarily of a certain age, but if you love The Tonight Show, since we just talked about The Tonight Show in the previous episode with the trumpeter, she played Art Fearn's sidekick on the Tea Time movie segments. So she played the Carol Wayne role after Carol Wayne passed. But she wasn't as ditzy as Carol Wayne. I know Carol Wayne was smart, but oh, I just love Teresa Genzel. She's just so adorable and funny and
still is.
Oh, nobody ever said she wasn't, but I just absolutely love Teresa Genzel. And that isn't even all with the names. Because playing Mrs. Bolton in this episode, I think we're making a Hall of Fame case here, guys. Liz Sheridan. And again, where you'd know her, one, Seinfeld, but also two, again, beloved to me, she played Raquel Achmanek on ALF.
Her husband is played by Preston Hanson, and his best-known credit was as the MC in the feel-good film of 1988, Action Jackson. Episode 10, Like That Brave Little Gal in the Philippines. Panic runs through the house when it's learned that one of Ned McGuire's companies is losing $1 million a month. And just as LK learns of that, Bully winds up in the hospital. Episode 11, My Dinner with LK. Bully and Ricardo set up LK on a date with a senatorial candidate. Playing said candidate, Brad Stark, a man by the name of John Riley, who is best known for 522 episodes of General Hospital as Sean Donnelly. He also voiced Hawkeye, Beetle, and Gletkin in 20 episodes of Iron Man, the animated series.
And he's been on a number of previous entries. We may not have mentioned him, but the short list from what I can see, he was on, among other things, Tales of the Gold Monkey and The Powers of Matthew Starr and Here's Boomer and Madam's Place. So that's five episodes. I don't think we're going to be putting him in the Hall of Fame just because I think this is the first time we've mentioned him, but he's hit that magic five number.
And perhaps making a future Hall of Fame case, playing his aide is Sam McMurray. He was in Tracy Ullman's show, among other things. He was Supervisor O'Boyle on King of Queens, if you're a fan of that.
He also voiced Roy Hess on Dinosaurs, 49 episodes, because we love our dinosaurs around here.
Just remember, they're not steroids. They're thornoids.
Even though it had steroid in the episode title, they're not steroids.
Can't say that on ABC. Not during the family hour.
Episode 12, Demon Child 86.
Oh, darn. I haven't seen Demon Child since Demon Child 78 and Demon Child PM.
Remember when Jay Wolpert brought back Demon Child in 1998? Anyway.
But that was just called Demon Child. Do you remember the original version called The Demon Child back in the 60s?
Yeah. GSN rebooted it earlier this year as Hellspawn.
Do you remember the time that the person spun the star wheel on Demon Child PM and the wheel started going backwards? That was a wacky episode. No, I'm not high, people.
This is Mike Stone Cold Sober, ladies and gentlemen. Eleanor gets roped into babysitting a friend's venomous teenage daughter for the weekend. Meanwhile, Bully and Ricardo care for a rat that they rescued from the pool and named Eleanor. So playing Cornelia Hemsdale, the teenage brat, Sarah Buxton from all 551 episodes of Sunset Beach, 195 episodes of The Bold and the Beautiful, and 4 episodes of Rags to Riches. I only mentioned that because we may be covering it soon. Possibly.
Hey, we got another name that we've talked about a couple of times. Playing Don Martin in this episode is Patrick Thomas O'Brien. We mentioned that he played Mr. Dewey on Saved by the Bell, but also he was in the movie UHF. He played Satan. I'm sorry, Satan? And I wish I had some sort of like echo effect, sort of like they did on church chat back in the day. Satan, and he also was in an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The Gang Runs for Office, Season 2, Episode 8.
Episode 13, and this is the last episode of the initial order of episodes, because I always start with 13. Friends for Life. LK isn't happy to learn that Eleanor invited a dictator to stay at the house.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Playing said dictator, from future entry Zorro and Son, Henry Darrow. He plays the dictator by the name of Guillermo Cortez.
I'm going to assume he's the Zorro.
He is the Zorro.
Now, hold on. Is the Guillermo on this show related to the Guillermo from Jimmy Kimmel Live?
Don't you wish?
Now, we did mention that he played Zorro and Zorro and Son. He was also one of the two actors who played Don Alejandro de la Vega, the father of Zorro, in The New Zorro. The other one, of course, being Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
And playing his wife, Christina Cortez, is Silvana Gallardo. I mention her for one reason and one reason only, and I do this for Greg because I care about him. Greg, she was in an episode of What a Country, second mention this episode.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm still looking for the lyrics. I'm going to find them before the end of the episode.
So, those were the first 13 episodes. Two of them aired on Saturday night before they moved to their regular time on Sunday night. Right after Our House and right before the Hogan Family. Or I guess it would be Valerie at this time. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, it did well, but there is a reason why we're talking about it on this show. And we'll get to that and the final 9 episodes right after we take time out for these era-appropriate messages.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
One really good way to use the Bartles and James Premium Wine Cooler is as a topping. For example, when used as a topping for ice, it improves the flavor of ice considerably. So instead of having your ice just plain, add some Bartles and James. You will notice a big improvement.
He's a 42-year-old ex-Marine.
Get up!
He's a 14-year-old boy genius. Together, they'll trash the freshman class in Roomies, premiering Friday.
My first guest this evening is an absolute phenomenon. Would you please welcome Wrinkles the Talking Dog.
Hello, I'm Wrinkles.
And I'm Johnny.
Can we talk?
Wrinkles really does talk with you without a tape. It's all electronic.
Why don't we kiss?
I'm sorry. Lips that touch dog food shall never touch mine.
It's hard to believe new Talking Wrinkles carries on a conversation, but that's what friends are for.
It's an alien.
No kidding. Where?
It's living in America.
I like what they've done with the place.
It loves cats.
Can't get enough of them.
It's Alf.
He's debonair and yet fuzzy.
My parents just don't understand our relationship.
I mean, this whole cat thing's been blown all out of proportion.
Alf.
Alf. Alien life form, new from Coleco.
Come, see what's growing in the garden. What's chopping? What's baking? What's popping? What's shaking? What's savory? What's saucy? What's squeaky? What's sweet? What's twirling and whirling? What's wooing and eyeing? The best of Italy is what's growing in the garden. The Olive Garden Italian Restaurant.
Sunday, the NFL plays here when the Jets battle the Patriots.
Before your team takes the field, our team hits the air. NFL 86.
And we're back. I hope you enjoyed that little tribute we slipped in the commercial break there.
Yes. Rest in peace, Virgil. Now let's resume with the last 9 episodes.
So now we are back into January, and Our House is starting to pick up steam, which can only help Easy Street, right? We'll get to that, but first, let's talk about the remainder of the run. Episode 14, Frames and Dames. All eyes are on LK when she goes bowling with Bully and Ricardo. Meanwhile, Quentin racks his brain to devise a profitable invention. Playing Ernst Kleinstabber, and yes, that is his Christian name, Armin Shimmerman, a.k.a. Quark from the Star Trek franchise. Another name in this episode is Ernie, played by Al Ruscio, who played Mr. Carlman in Showgirls and Leo Caneo in The Godfather Part 3, and was on a handful of episodes of Seventh Heaven. Episode 15, The Check is in the Mail. While Eleanor's busy hiring a press agent, Bully wants to give money to a down-on-his-luck boxer he read about in a bleeding heart story in a newspaper. The Boston Bleeder, he's called, and he's played by Jeffrey Lewis, who was Orville in the 1978 classic Every Which Way But Loose. And playing Perry, the press agent, Lance Kinsey, a.k.a. Proctor from the Police Academy movies.
Proctor!
Fun fact, he was also a story consultant and a creative consultant on both Sue Thomas FBI and Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh.
Episode 16, The Mad Gardener. Although the lawn stinks and the plants are dying, no one has the nerve to fire the creepy gardener for fear that he'll become unhinged. Ravenkeep, the Mad Gardener, is played by a favorite of Hugh Wilson's and Lonnie Anderson's, Richard Sanders, Les Nessman himself.
As God is his witness, he thought turkeys could fly.
Episode 17, Willpower. With a trial date set for her case against LK, finally, Eleanor decides to suck up to Bobby to ensure his testimonial won't be damaging. Playing Tim Weathergate, the judge in this case, Dakin Matthews. We talked about him in previous entry Drexel's class. Episode 18, Too Many Cooks, Too Many Cooks. Chef Vito is beside himself when Bully takes over the kitchen in preparation for a chili cooking contest. Playing Chef Vito, we talked about him before, the one, the only, star of Lots of Luck, Dom DeLuise.
It's also, let's tie it in another way, with Lonnie Anderson. Lonnie Anderson was married to Burt Reynolds, and Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise, they go back, specifically to Cannonball Run.
Episode 19, Our Kind of People. Eleanor and Quentin sell the house next door, but they have regrets when they realize that the new owner is a rock star.
Oh, the rock star they got. Oh my gosh.
Guy by the name of Colin Hammersmith, but who played him?
We've mentioned him in the past. I mentioned him when we were talking about the Moondog Coronation Ball, because I forget what the episode was, but Greg mentioned it within the last couple of months. And I talked about the Moondog Coronation Ball that happened here annually up until maybe, I'm guessing, 10-ish years ago, because we're talking about Alan Freed. And the name that I mentioned that I really wanted to see at this, and he played this occasionally, Peter Noon from Herman's Hermits. That is a classic name. Just a great talent, a funny guy. I mean, look at Herman Hermit's songs. I'm Henry the Eighth, I Am. That's a brilliant song. I love it.
Something Good is also a really good song.
Now, hold on a second, because we know that was in The Naked Gun. Mike, what did they just announce about The Naked Gun?
Oh, my gosh. I can't wait for this. This could be epic in about a year, but also it gives us a reason to put Police Squad on the schedule. They're rebooting The Naked Gun with Liam Neeson, and producing it is Seth MacFarlane. Okay, he's not Zucker, who can be, but I want to see what Seth MacFarlane does with this. And I still need to get Peacock so I can watch Ted. And actually, my coworkers are telling me I should watch another show on Peacock? It's called like Couples to Thruples.
What? Couple of Thruple. Yeah. That's going on the year in review, by the way. I gotta put, it's like, we can't not talk about that.
My coworkers have been talking about it all this week, and I don't want to watch it, but they're like, it's like a train wreck you can't avoid. You have to like turn and look at it.
Now, hold on a second. The Naked Gun reboot, is this going to be on Paramount Plus? Because remember, Paramount owns the rights to the original Naked Gun franchise.
I thought this was going to be a theatrical release, but I could be wrong.
Okay, so this is going to be a theatrical release. So I'm guessing it's going to be to a Paramount, correct?
Again, I just heard the news. I didn't read any details about it.
It's still in the very early stages.
But it did say summer of 2025. So fingers crossed in the next year and a half or so.
Okay, I'm looking at the ABC News article about it. It is being done through Paramount.
So maybe I need to get Paramount Plus 2 now. Great.
Help them out. They're bleeding money. Anyway, lesser name in this episode, Robert Ackerman plays Mr. Percy. He played J.P. Morgan on an episode of Voyagers.
Wait, I must have missed the episode of Voyagers where they went to see the Gong Show.
We're talking about the baker, J.P. Morgan. Not that.
And really, Greg, I really want to get this mental image of Robert Ackerman flashing the camera out of my mind, asshole.
Episode 20, The Country Club. Gambling problems arise when Bully and Ricardo visit the country club. Meanwhile, Eleanor, Quentin, and LK are forced to contend with staggering income taxes. Couple big names in this one. We have, as Lester R. Wiltman, Kenneth Kimmins from Coach, play Ross Chamberlain, Ronan O'Casey, who played Rutherford in 1956's 1984, but was also on previous entry, The Nut House, and future entries, Sledgehammer and Shell Game. Biggest name in this episode, playing Chip Blaisdale, the President of the United States, President Palmer, Dennis Haysbert.
So if you're keeping score, that's now three references to 24.
Episode 21, Made in Italy.
Wait, Made in Italy? Is this going to be about the time Conan took Jordan to Olive Garden?
Cheese it up!
Cheese it up!
Cheese it up!
We would like the Italian margarita. By the way, this episode is not sponsored by the Olive Garden. This is just an expression of love.
Now, hold on a second. While we're mentioning Olive Garden, Mike, can you describe your background on Zoom to the audience?
Well, it's a memorial to Virgil. And what it is, it's a picture of Virgil sitting at a convention booth with nobody near him. And I put in this with big text. R.I.P. Virgil, may you eternally enjoy all the Olive Garden breadsticks and meat sauce there is in the afterlife.
He would have wanted it that way.
And we should mention, this was part of our little pre-show routine. Because Greg, his Zoom background is about Sting retiring, which is fine. But I actually said to Greg, I said, really? Of all the opportunities to like pay honor to Virgil, you're not going to do it? Well, darn it, I will then.
And I love that it's the picture of Virgil at the convention with nobody near him, with Virgil wrestling superstar, which they actually, when they made a Virgil figure by Mattel a couple of years ago, they actually do have WWE superstar Virgil in that exact font as a prop. I'm not joking.
Oh, I didn't even talk about what this episode was about. Everyone is exceptionally pleased with the new maid's job performance, but no one knows how to comfort her when she begins sobbing uncontrollably. Turns out, she becomes homesick. The maid, an Angelica De Benedetto, is played by Amy Aquino, who is in future entry, Just One of the Boys, with Maria Conchita Alonso and another DeLuise, Michael DeLuise. playing a character named Guido, is Vincent Guastafaro, who is best known as Deputy Rick Colon in Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives.
Oh, the one where Horseshack gets it from Jason.
Episode 22, the final episode, Spring Fever. Eleanor and Quentin are annoyed when LK falls for Lane, their house guest, and Bully becomes overprotective. Meanwhile, Bobby is smitten when he discovers he has a secret admirer. Playing Lane, straight out of Riptide, Perry King.
Oh, that's terrific. Did the robot get work in this episode?
Probably the one that was falling for Bobby.
Well, as we all know, in a couple months, Joe Penny is going to be on Jake and the Fat Man, and he's going to be asked by William Conrad what was in the Danish.
I thought that was the plot to Batman 66.
No, the plot of Batman 66 is going to be how the Fat Man became fat, and also he's going to be eating all those Danishes and wondering what was in them. And then in Jake and the Fat Man, he asks Joe Penny what was in the Danish.
We're never going to find out what's in that dang on Danish. Anyway.
It was cheese! We know it's cheese!
Okay.
Cheese gives him gas!
It gives him a problem.
And that's the show, basically. I mean, it stayed on the Sunday night schedule, and it stayed an integral part of NBC's Sunday night schedule with your Our House and your Hogan Family and your Movie of the Week.
Now, hold on. It was not the Hogan Family yet. It was still Valerie.
And I said that earlier, too, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, the first season, it was called Valerie, 86 to 87. Then it had about 14 more names in the final couple seasons.
Easy Street was a very steady performer for NBC at that time, but there was one problem. It was on at 8 o'clock on Sunday. And what are you watching if you're watching TV at 8 o'clock on Sunday?
Oh, 60 Minutes.
8 o'clock.
Oh, Murder, She Wrote. Oh, wait, hold on. I gotta do it like Pat Summerall. Murder, She Wrote.
As good as a show as that is, you're not beating Murder, She Wrote. So rather than go through the whole rigmarole of getting the cast back together for Easy Street when Rags to Riches was a suitable fit, by the way, Rags to Riches was the show that replaced Easy Street Sundays at 8, fit in with an audience, they decided, NBC decided, that is, to cut their losses and move on. Easy Street was briefly run on Lifetime shortly after its cancellation. It was never given a proper home release. Three episodes have made their way onto the Internet Archive. One episode made its way onto YouTube. The rest of the series is considered lost media. Lonnie Anderson would not suffer any career-ending damage from this show. In fact, she would find later success reprising her role as Jennifer Marlowe on WKRP in Cincinnati. That should be the new WKRP in Cincinnati. And not only that, she would find love.
Yeah, with Turd Ferguson.
You don't look like Norm MacDonald to me. I'm just imagining Burt Reynolds coming out wearing this big foam cowboy hat.
And if you look dotted on the schedule in the late 90s to early 2000s, you can find her in That Thing, where she is that blonde from That Thing. Most notably, or probably most lengthy, as Mandy Mullet Heidecker on The Mullets.
Oh, no!
But that's another story for another day.
Well, look on the bright side. It gives us an excuse to talk about David Hornsby and John O'Hurley.
Yes, and also yes. So yeah, that's pretty much all she wrote on this show. I mean, Easy Street was a good idea on paper. It had the audience, but NBC, they wanted to go in a different direction on Sundays, knowing full well that they could not beat Murder, She Wrote. They moved Valerie over to Mondays to follow Alf. Valerie moved on from Valerie, and Easy Street just became a thing on TV.
Now, hold on a second. Before Mike does this week in Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour update, would you believe that while doing some random Googling, I found something that's not related to this episode, but related to something we talked about, and I just had to do a non-eBay Price is Right for it. Guys, you're going to be bidding on from ringsidecollectibles.com the figure of Virgil that I just talked about. It is from Mattel. It says, first time in the line, Virgil. Includes convention sign. And that's the sign that says, Virgil, WWE Superstore. Guys, what is the price on ringsidecollectibles.com for this figure? Chico,
I'm going to start the bidding with you.
$25.
$25, Mike.
And worth every penny at $25. You know, I was going to actually say $25. Was this price found today or just now?
Today. I mean, just now. This is the price right now.
And this is the price that they're offering on this website?
Yes.
Okay. I'll go $29.
You've both overbid.
Of course we did.
Well, I'm buying it now then, because seriously, I thought it'd be like $30.
Okay. I got to go lower than 25. $15 and worth every penny.
Mike.
$18 and worth every penny.
You're not going to believe this. $24.99.
Oh, Chico, you're over by a penny. But we were both going to say 25, so we're both technically over by a penny.
I only thought that way because it was like, you know, that's how much I pay for a Lightning Collection figure, but I think I got them all, so it's like, oh God, what do I do with my time now? But yeah, I mean, it, look at it. The only thing you're missing is like a little folding table.
Hey, I'll stick with my Virgil Hasbro that I have. Thank you very much.
No, seriously, I would get that in a heartbeat. I would love if, obviously, he was still alive. And I'm sure that if he was still alive, he'd be somewhere this weekend signing autographs. I would love to get that sign. But yeah, I'd spend $25 on that. I've got in my Amazon queue the Alf NECA figurine that I've had sitting there for the last like 3 months. I for some reason can't pull the trigger on that. And on my Best Buy queues, I have both Dinosaurs figurines. I have Earl and Baby Sinclair. But again, me being this tightwad I am, I can't pull the trigger on spending $70 on those two figurines.
Now, hold on. What if you had, I love to see this, you buying the Earl Sinclair figure, you buying the Virgil figure, and you having them next to each other.
Now, I think what would be better is if I had the Earl Sinclair figure with the Virgil sign, Virgil WWE Superstar.
You can pretend it's Virgil in the Earl Sinclair suit.
Or maybe, even better yet, maybe I can get Baby Sinclair with Virgil and have Baby Sinclair hit him over the head with a folding chair.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Okay, I need to stop buying sports cards with my money. I need to buy these figurines and just like recreate these scenes for our enjoyment.
While you do that, I think it's time to jump into the TARDIS and go back to 1984.
No, I don't want to. I want to think
get
about...
Get in the TARDIS, Mike!
No, shush! I want to think about Baby Sinclair hitting...
Get in the TARDIS right now!
No, stop! No, don't tell me what to do, Dad. I still want to think about Virgil hitting Virgil. Baby Sinclair hitting Virgil over the head with the folding chair. And then they all go to Olive Garden to get breadsticks afterwards. Okay, I'm going in the TARDIS. Here we go.
I was going to say, Baby Sinclair with the most shocking heel turn of all time.
That no, wasn't really that shocking if you think about it.
Oh, yeah, because remember that episode where we saw Baby Sinclair as a grown-up, and they showed the flashback security cam footage of him doing the stick-up?
I blame you, Bobby.
Yeah, I'm the baby. Gotta love me.
Okay, let's do the thing with Gene and Bowser now.
It's time for this weekend match game. Hollywood Square, our history.
Hey, Baby Sinclair, put down the damn folding chair while I'm doing this segment. So, we're in the first full week of... Damn it, I can't do this. So, we're in the first full week of March of 1984 now, and this week, we have Aaron Moran, who would have been in the final season of Happy Days this year, James Sloyan from Oh, Madeline, Nancy Frangione, Fred Travellina, Charles Nelson Reilly, Martha Smith, Christopher Rich, and Bob Eubanks from Dreamhouse. This week, one of the things that's noted is that the X's and O's in the squares segment have newer and brighter lighting, which I remember it was kind of dim early on. And that was the only thing dim, right, John Bauman? But anyhow, how the hell did this show go off the rails? But also this week, you had Johnny Olsen actually filling in for three episodes for Gene Wood. So you got to hear him say, from Dreamhouse, Bob Eubanks. It's not as good as from Hot Potato, Bill Cullen, but you take what you can get. So we did have a retired champion leave on the Tuesday episode. Joyce Reeves left with $57,700. And they actually brought back a contestant from week 11. So that would have been 8 weeks earlier due to a problem with a question. And in terms of big money wins this week, the aforementioned Joyce Reeves, she won $20,000 with John on Monday. And then Wednesday, John gave away another $20,000. See if you can follow a trend here, guys. And then on Thursday, $10,000 with John. And then Thursday, $10,000 with, take a guess who.
John?
No, Christopher Rich. Of course, John Bauman. So he won four times this week. This is like a trend because everybody goes to John. And I think I mentioned in a previous update that I noticed for a long period of time, talking literally months, that John Bauman didn't have the 30. Supposedly, this was picked at random. I mean, I could easily figure out the probability of John not being picked 45 or 50 times in a row, but it just seems a little weird that he never had the 30. Just saying. Next week, I think this is the first week of one of our favorites appearing on Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. And we actually referred to the TV show he was on at that point earlier in this episode. Maybe that'll give Greg and Chico an idea as to who we're going to see. But we'll talk about him and other people next week. Chico, let's wrap up this thing. I want to put in there audio of Baby Sinclair hitting Virgil with the folding chair and saying, "Napa, Napa." Okay. I'm going to just mute now. Shut up, Mike.
Wow.
That was a subtle roar.
That was a sexy roar.
Sunday, Easy Street moves to its regular time with a big celebration.
That dude is a party reptile.
Brush up your social skills.
No.
For Easy Street. Then let's all raise a toast.
I have raised a fool.
To the season premiere of Valerie.
And I'm not even dressed yet.
Sunday.
Episode 460, submission number 2515, Days Like These. Days Like These aired on ITV from the 12th of February to the 14th of July 1999 for a total of 13 episodes, three of which went unaired. So not counting the unaired episodes, that is six less than a crock block. Greg, you are the historian. Do we have anything from February of 1999?
No, we do not. In fact, hold on a second. By my count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is the 7th entry from 1999. The other ones are Doctor Who, The Curse of Fatal Death from episode 431. Well, this isn't an episode, but I might as well count this from Minisode 22. Ball, get out of my nachos! The Jesse Ventura story from episode 214. The Chimp Channel back in episode 10. A recent entry, Chuck E. Cheese in the Galaxy 5000. And Shasta McNasty.
And now, for perhaps the only anachronism that we will ever have on this podcast, a song from 1990 by Asia in this 70s themed TV series. In the late 1990s, Bonnie and Terry Turner teamed up with Mark Brezel to create a show for Fox about six teenagers living in Point Place, Wisconsin during the mid to late 1970s. It was called Teenage Wasteland. However, The Who's Pete Townsend refused to sign off on that name. So they tried The Kids Are All Right. Pete Townsend didn't sign off on that name. So they just tried Feeling It All Right. But Fox looked at Feeling All Right and thought that the name was less than memorable. So Bonnie Turner suggested that the show would just be called That 70s Show, because an audience member in the crowd would say, I loved that show about the 70s. It was that point where it ultimately became the official title for the show. According to many of the cast members, this wasn't a send-up of the 70s or a parody of the 70s. It was legitimately living as a teenager in the 70s. And it became the second longest live-action sitcom in Fox history. Seeing the success on Fox, ITV wanted a piece of that 70s action. But it wasn't just enough to, you know, just import the episodes, because that would be the easy way out. And the thing of it is, and this is partly also the reason why Days Like These failed, the show was way too American. It's also why Coupling failed in the US, because if you watch the original Coupling, it was way too British. So Tom Werner, Marcy Carsey, Karen Mandebach, the Turners, and Terry Brazel teamed up with Jesse Armstrong and Sam Bain, who would go on to create such shows like Peep Show and Succession. I know you like Succession, Greg.
I don't really watch Succession. I only watch it for Alan Ruck.
That's good enough for me. But they teamed up to adapt several early episodes for British audiences, which of course means taking American references and turning them into British references. For example, I want to say they were watching a Star Trek rerun in one episode. That became a Doctor Who rerun.
Oh, that's good. I'm sure they're probably watching some good Tom Baker episodes.
And they replaced President Ford in an episode with Prince Charles. A single Prince Charles, because this is the 70s after all. And also they replaced the town of Point Place, Wisconsin with the real life town of Luton, which is in the east of England, a few miles north of London. Did it work? We'll talk about that in a moment, but right now let's talk about all of the people who are on Days Like These. they didn't change many of the names, but you will know who's who in a moment. In the role of Eric Foreman, they didn't change that name, is Max Rotsley, who played a sacrificed Nova Corman in Guardians of the Galaxy, and is also known as Sir Laurent Marbrand in a couple of episodes of House of the Dragon, besides playing a voice in Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Hold on, which Star Wars Battlefront 2?
It just says Star Wars Battlefront 2 from 2017.
Okay, the EA Star Wars Battlefront. Because the original Star Wars Battlefront games are getting a remaster.
And he was Agent Dean in one episode of 24, Live Another Day.
So if you're keeping score, that's 424 references this week.
Playing his parents, Ron Foreman, not Red Foreman, Ron Foreman and Kitty Foreman, Trevor Cooper from Star Cops in 1987, and playing Kitty Foreman is Anne Bryson, who was in Doctor Who, The Monthly Adventures for Big Finish.
Because we can't get enough of talking about Big Finish on this podcast.
Playing his neighbor slash sometimes girlfriend, Donna Palmer, not Donna Pinciotti, Donna Palmer, Rosie Marcel, who you may remember as the detective in the bathroom from Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Or maybe I'm the only one who remembers that.
I remember that scene. Well, maybe we'll talk about it one day.
Playing her parents, Bob and Midge Palmer, Steve Steen, you might remember from Whose Line Is It Anyway? I know I do. And also Blackadder. And Sarah Stockbridge, who you might remember from Interview with the Vampire. The best friends include Dylan Jones, who was supposed to be Stephen Hyde, played by Harry Peacock, who was Proper Dave in two 2008 episodes of Doctor Who.
That is the Silence in the Library episode. That is the debut of River Song, if I remember correctly, in season 4.
He was also a regular in Drunk History UK.
That's right, because they made a UK Drunk History. But no Derek Waters.
Then you have Michael Maguire, not Michael Kelso, Michael Maguire, played by Carlton James, credited as James Carlton, didn't do much before this show and hasn't done much since.
He was on 112 episodes of Emmerdale Farm.
Oh, okay.
What is that? I have no idea what that is.
It's a soap opera.
Oh.
Yeah, anything that lasts, like, more than, say, 24 episodes in Britain is a soap opera.
Well, it's no Coronation Street, damn it.
It's no EastEnders either.
Playing his girlfriend, Jackie Burgett, not Jackie Burkhart, Emma Pearson, who was on episodes of The Original Coupling, My Hero, and as a regular on both Killing Eve and Hotel Babylon, all of which aired on BBC America once upon a time. But we Yanks can hear her as the voice of Nene in Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition for the Switch. And rounding out the cast is a fellow by the name of Torbjorn Rasmussen, played by Jamie Beck. Three guesses who he's supposed to be.
Whoever Tommy Chung played?
No, he's supposed to be Fez.
Oh.
I'm thinking of all of the things Fez says, and then I think about Torbjorn, who says them in a slightly different Swedish accent. Because in the show, Torbjorn is Swedish. They basically took existing American scripts and changed them into British scripts. For example, they substituted an old British car for the old American car when Eric gets the family car. Prince Charles for President Ford when Eric goes streaking. And of course, Lutton for rural Wisconsin. But I do have the episode guide if you want to hear it. Episode 1, Batteries Not Included. An adaptation of That 70s Pilot. Eric, having been given access to a car, takes his friends to a Cockney Rebel concert. Episode 2, Eric's Birthday. Adapted from the script of the same name, Eric's birthday is drawing near. His mother plans a not-so-surprise party. Meanwhile, Donna struggles to figure out what to get him. Playing Eric's sister, Helen Forman, is Lucy Punch. We talked about her in previous entry, The Class. But we also remember her as Esme Squalor on Netflix's A Series of Unfortunate Events. Episode 3, Crown Jewels. An adaptation of the episode Streaking, Eric and the gang plan to streak during appearance by Prince Charles. Episode 4, Disco Nights. An adaptation of That Disco Episode. When the gang decides to go to a disco, Dylan gets dance lessons from Eric's mother with unintended consequences. Episode 5, Double Bill. An adaptation of Drive-In. Donna invites Michael and Jackie to the pictures despite Eric not wanting them to join. Torbjorn's parents worry about the influence that his music is having on him. We have another veteran of EastEnders and Doctor Who The Monthly Adventures on this episode. Man by the name of Paul Shearer, who is known for The Man Who Knew Too Little in 1997. Episode 6. I Hate Sundays. An adaptation of Sunday Bloody Sunday. Eric's grandmother comes to visit the family during a Sunday afternoon. Playing Grandma is June Whitfield, who is known for 36 episodes as Jennifer Saunders' mother on Absolutely Fabulous, and was in the movie of the same name, as well as at least 2 Carry On movies. Now, for those of you who are not British, Carry On is the second longest continuous movie franchise in history. The first one, of course, being Godzilla. And Greg, she played Minnie Hooper in 2 episodes of Doctor Who from 2009 to 2010.
Oh.
Episode 7, Grandma's Dead. An adaptation of the episode of the same name. After Eric tells her why he hates her visits, his grandmother promptly dies. This episode aired 5 weeks before the American version. Playing St. Peter in this episode, Leslie Phillips, who was the voice of the Sorting Hat in a film franchise that we will not mention. Episode 8, Stolen Car. An adaptation of the episode of the same name. When Eric has his car privileges taken away, Michael's cousin comes to the rescue. But all is not as it seems. Episode 9, The Pill. An adaptation of the episode of the same name. When Donna thinks that she is pregnant, she is put on the pill. Episode 10, Equal Rights. An adaptation of Battle of the Sexists. When Donna beats Eric in a game of ping pong, and then in a game of basketball, he feels as if his masculinity has been called into question. And that's actually the last episode that aired. Now, there would be 3 other produced episodes, but they would not air until later on at late night slots when nobody was watching. The first one is Eric The Burger Chef, an adaptation of Eric's Burger Job. After being hired as a burger chef, Eric finds that he has little time to spend with Donna.
Wait, they franchised the Burger Chef restaurant chain to the UK in the 70s?
No.
Oh.
Playing Martin in that episode, Robbie G, who is known as quite a prolific film actor nowadays. He was in Underworld, Paddington 2, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, Snatch. It was also in Zack Snyder's Justice League. Not Justice League, Zack Snyder's Justice League.
That's right, in glorious 133:1 aspect ratio.
The way it was intended.
On a 1980s big screen TV.
And that was actually the last episode produced. There were two more episodes adapted, reportedly based on Thanksgiving and Eric's Buddy, but they were never produced prior to the show's cancellation.
Aw.
So, what happened? Although it is plainly obvious as to see what exactly did happen. There was absolutely nothing standing this show apart from its American cousin. I mean, you look at a show like Three's Company that was adapted from Man About the House and The Office, which was adapted from The Office. They branched off and became their own thing. And people loved them for it. But that 70s show, which was incredible when it first began and got even more incredible as it ran on, you watch that, and then you watch something like this show, and you just see where it just went absolutely horribly, horribly wrong. I mean, if you've never seen that 70s show, you might have enjoyed Days Like These a little bit more. But having seen that 70s show, I watched Days Like These, and I'm thinking to myself, that was a weak streak, Eric. I'll bring up a couple of scenes from YouTube to illustrate my point. One scene, and I'm only going to show the one scene because if we showed a whole lot of scenes, we'd be here all day. The one scene was Eric about to go streaking. See if you can tell the difference.
Are you going to streak?
No, we took a vote and it's unanimous. We're all very chicken.
That's too bad. It's been a while since I've seen you naked.
You've never seen me naked.
Like a zillion times. We were kids. You were always running around the neighborhood naked, screaming, wee wee, pee pee.
Now it's time for the Q&A portion of our program. First up, I'd like to introduce Red Foreman. Red is the father of two wonderful children, and how he's managed to keep them clothed and fed while being cut back to halftime at the plant is beyond me. But he doesn't blame the president for his misfortune. No, sir, he only blames himself. I give you Red Foreman.
Mr. President,
come on, Red. Your dad is balmy.
Thank you.
Hey, Jerry. Here's my question. How the hell could you pardon Nixon?
Good stuff, right?
Yeah.
This is how they did it on days like these.
It's unanimous. We're all chickens.
That's a shame. I was really looking forward to distraction from the Palmer Family Flag Day. Besides, it's been ages since I've seen you naked.
Well, you've never seen me naked.
Eric, I've seen you naked about a million times. When we were kids, you used to run up the road screaming, wee wee pee pee.
And let's talk about your doctor and nurses in the sandpit.
Okay, quits.
I'd like now to ask Mr. Ron Foreman, an employee at the local car factory, to stand and give thanks to His Royal Highness on behalf of the people of Luton for his visit here today. Ron.
Thank you. Yes. I've got something very important that I've got to say.
Ron. Your dad is freaking out.
I must say, we did know you were coming here today, but we didn't expect to see the crown jewels as well.
All right, class, compare and contrast.
That was bad. The crown jewels thing is not as good as Red's "How could you have poured Nixon?" Which, by the way, Red, in 2024, yeah, we're asking the same thing, especially nowadays.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing, although you saw where Red was coming across as his classic Red self. And Ron Foreman is just...
bleh.
So yeah, I mean, if you've never seen That 70s Show before, I get where you would totally get that sort of thing, but having seen That 70s Show before, not moved.
No. To quote Mr. Horse, no, sir, I didn't like it.
The British public, they pretty much thought the same thing. And after 6 episodes, ITV put it on hiatus, moved it, and then aired it for a few more episodes before pulling the plug altogether. For some of the cast members, this would just be a soft landing, especially for the likes of Steve Steen and Emma Pearson. The rest of the cast made sporadic appearances in the limelight, but nothing of any lasting significance. Unlike That 70s Show, where everybody in the cast went on to become really big stars. Except for that one guy that we will not talk about.
Good.
The show itself, Days Like These, was never given a proper home release. It has never rerun anywhere, but thanks to a YouTuber by the name of Anglo Girl, 8 of the episodes exist online. So, thanks, Anglo Girl. The other two aired episodes and the three unaired episodes remain lost to this day, according to Lost Media Wiki. And given how fast the show is canceled, it's unlikely that the series will ever resurface in full. But thanks to the wonder of modern technology, people all over the world can see what the 70s had in store on the original That 70s Show, leaving this remake confined to the bin of things on TV that were indeed lost in translation. We're going to take our TARDIS back to 2024, where we can happily listen to the 459 installments that preceded this one over at itwasathingontv.com. Not only the proper episodes, but also minisodes, live watches, delayed reactions, instant reactions, presents, all that sort of thing. And of course, not only are they available on itwasathingontv.com, they're also available wherever fine podcasts can be streamed. And also, we are on all social media at It Was a Thing on TV, except for Facebook, where you have to look for us at It Was a Thing on TV Podcast, and Mastodon, where you have to look for us at It Was a Thing on TV at tvwatch.party.
And of course, if you're listening on Place Media Pop Experience, you can always catch us on the Friday on the Bus Drops every Friday. And I hope you enjoyed that discussion about the Virgil figure. That was pretty good.
I just bought one.
Wait, you actually bought it?
No, I did not.
Oh. Why haven't you?
I haven't finished recording yet.
Okay.
Also, we are on YouTube, and we would really appreciate it if you liked, subscribed, and hit the notification bell so you can stay up to date on the other Lost in Translation bits we have for the next couple of weeks. That's right. Normally, it's a week. Normally, it's two episodes. This year, it's 3 weeks and three episodes. And Greg is going to explain why.
Okay. Now, back in the summer, we experimented with one episode a week. And that was mainly due to my summer schedule and everything. But we decided that at some point next year, to start going maybe a little bit regularly before the summer to go to one episode a week. Now, what we decided to do, because normally around this time we have pilot month, like in March or April. So we decided to put pilot month to May because we didn't want to do the one episode a week starting in March and then have pilot month in April and then have people say, well, you said you're only going to be doing one episode a week and now you're doing two episodes a week in April. Because sometimes for pilot months, they're like, normally we're doing half-hour episodes. It's easy to do two episodes a week. So we decided to push pilot month to May and just give you like one episode a week for the next 2 months on the regular feed.
So the next episode is going to be the first in our series of What a Weeks for a while. And in that episode, we are continuing Lost in Translation Fortnite, with a delectable Japanese tradition taking root on American soil, but not the one you're thinking of. This one comes with a starship captain.
Oh?
It's a crazy Japanese game show, given an American version. And we'll talk about that next week, right here on It Was a Thing on TV. Thank you so much for listening. Please be kind to one another, and we will see you or the next one.
Wow.
I want to be an American. I want to live here to stay. I want to be an American. I want to say what I got to say. I want to be an American in the land of the free. I want to be an American. It's right for me. Hello, Lincoln. Hello, Dixie. Hello, hot dog. Hello, baseball. Hello, Broadway. Hello, hello, hello. I want to be an American.
I want to be an American.
In the land of the free.
In the land of the free.
I want to be an American.
I want to be an American.
It's right for me.
It's right for me.
In America. It's right for me.
and